whenever.
Now I can. Yeah, all right, recording in two, one.
Okay, we are recording audio simultaneously because, of course, we want to get this out on the podcast feed. Hello, everybody. How's it going? how are you doing, Andrew?
I for the first time ever, I lack words. There has never been I think you said historically somebody said that the Capitol was stormed during the War of 1812. And being that I'm just under 208 years of age, I think I can safely say
that's a little pre-Ally
McBeal.
Never
been a day like this. Yeah.
Yeah. Credit to Andrew for the background idea. Credit where credit's due. Yeah. He just saw that this is real. Mike Pence, not on his VP account, but on his personal account that has 6.1 million followers or something. So he put that picture on his account. That's real. You can look it up right
and
now.
And that was, I get that from our chat here.
Right. So. Yeah. That's incredible. So we really wanted to just spend some time with our audience today. Like I really, this wasn't planned, but first off, we were both over the moon over the news and I was planning on recording a very happy, jubilant SIO and, I assumed we'd do our thing tomorrow on our usual day, but seeing this stuff happen, I mean, this is just appalling, Andrew. I mean, this is the kind of crap that Glenn Beck would cry crocodile tears over, but actually really happening. I mean, it's sad. This is incredibly sad.
It as much as anything ever, right? Like we've spent the last 4 years while Trump supporters have done the things that they envisioned that Barack Obama was supposed to do. Right.
Yeah.
Engaging in, authoritarian, unitary executive actions to consolidate power in the executive branch, and the idea. So what we have here today. Let me talk about this right out of the gate because I really want all of our listeners to know this. Okay, what you are seeing is the combination of the extreme stupidity and the extreme conspiracy theory behavior and mindset of Trump supporters, right?
They are the bad guy in the disaster movie who thinks he can control the space alien for his own capitalist purposes or something, and then the alien turns around and kills it. Like they think they could control it. All Ted Cruz, Hawley, all these people, they think they can cynically just use this force of nature, this just completely out of their mind in conspiracy theory force. They think they can use that and there won't be any consequences. Well, there are consequences to it. It catches up to you.
Absolutely. And, to respond to that, I mean, you and I have already talked about this, but like the idea that Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz think they're going to pick up the Donald Trump block in 2024 and become the presidential nominee is laughable. That's going to be Donald Trump Jr. or Ivanka Trump, right? If you haven't learned that the only people Donald Trump cares about have the surname Trump or are married to people with the surname Trump, then you haven't been paying attention.
If Trump's not in prison, he would have to run, Trump Jr. would have to run against Trump. I don't think that'll happen. If Trump's not in prison, he will try to make a run. But anyway, we're off topic, but I've said several times, I just feel like between the Georgia stuff that we have to cover and the potential violations there, which we have to talk about, and the New York stuff, God, I mean, what are the odds that he is available to run in 2024?
Yeah, something like that. Let me go back to my original thought before I lose it. And that is these idiots, because they are all the QAnon, Alex Jones, David Icke, the lizard people congregate in the basement at Comet Ping Pong, right? Because of that, they think that temporarily delaying the ministerial opening of the electoral votes is going to keep Donald Trump in office. It will not. Already, my TV's in the background, and I'm looking around from time to time to see what happens. DC has put a 6 o'clock curfew into effect. That crowd will be cleared out, and boy, Thomas, I imagine you and I both have some thoughts on the police, their response to the white act of sedition today versus how the Capitol Police cleared out BLM protests 6 months ago.
Well, so, there is so much to talk about. First off, so somebody is trying. People are trying to tell me that that's Pence and his wife or something.
It could be. I mean, look, we
look
saw
at his head. That's not Pence. Really?
It is doesn't. It. It.
Well,
it seems plausible to me.
That. Yeah, I guess it could be, but.
Try and verify for us. We saw it in our chat here and tried to run with it.
It was just for fun. Yeah, not a lot rides on the whether or not Pence actually is doing something like that. But anyway,
right? Not just a lot. Nothing
rides
on it.
Yeah, I don't. And by the way, that's something that I wanted to say. There's so much. It's overwhelming. But one thing I want to say is we can't like with all this Trump stuff. And this era, we can't forget about who enabled this. It's not – there's a lot – you see a lot of people now trying to – violence. Oh, violence. Who – whoa, okay. And they're trying to wash their hands of it. That's not okay. Like there – I'll tell you, there's one Republican who I accept that from, and that's Mitt Romney. Not that I'm the biggest Mitt Romney fan, but Mitt Romney did more than any other Republican who was in power to oppose the Brett. First person ever to vote to convict a president of their own party. So that's the only Republican who can say this is not his fault. This is all their faults, and it should not be forgotten.
Yep. Could not agree more. I want to talk about some of the institutional stuff, right? So, our reading into
McCain is dead. So no, I'm not talking about whether or not McCain can be held accountable for this.
Yeah. You know,
anyway, I shouldn't respond to the chat in the middle of your thought. I apologize.
No, that is totally fine. We're doing it live.
Yeah.
But here's my thought on that. I want to talk about institutions. I want to talk about today. I want you and I to talk about Mitch McConnell's speech, right? And how we weigh, you know, what is. I mean, I texted you during McConnell's speech and I said, look, this is the embodiment of Yodel Mountain. It's ridiculous that it's happening now, right? That it took.
Well, you said that. Oh, okay. Did you say that Georgia was that, or what were you saying was that specifically?
I was saying that in my mind, I was saying that that was Mitch McConnell's speech, right? Mitch McConnell going to the floor of the Senate and saying, I value the rule of law more than I value what's in the Republican self-interest. Oh, and by the way, here's why it's not in our self-interest to continue to cater to this person, right? Like, we don't need to, you know, bend over backwards pretending that Mitch McConnell isn't evil. He's plenty evil. But what we saw is that if you make it difficult to overturn norms, then that helps. That gives people enough roadblocks where you can get them to, you know, to stop and stand up and say, all right, that's a bridge too far even for me, right? And we saw not just McConnell do that today, but prominent arch-conservative Republicans about whom we would never have a good word to say, right? Shelley Moore Capito in West Virginia, Mike Lee in Utah, who's a garbage monster, right? Like, I would cross the street to piss on Mike Lee if he were on fire, right? Yeah. Like, he's terrible. And these are people who are terrible, but without either the ambition and or stupidity to think that they need to try and cater to the Trump bloc. And that's all it takes, right? We saw that we at least had that.
Mind you, I no one gets any credit. Again, Mitt Romney, I give a tiny bit of credit. None of them get credit. I tweeted this. I wonder if you agree with it. If they could have overturned the election via this process, they would. I think they would. This is very clearly a calculation by McConnell that since this isn't and probably Pence, that since this isn't a real avenue for actually overturning the results, they get to pretend that they're I'm all about the Constitution. I care about the will of the people. They don't care. They would do it if they could, but they can't. So they're going to pretend they're high minded. That's how I read it.
I think that's right. And remember, part of Yodel Mountain that was baked into it was always a question of self-interest, right? Was at what point do Republican senators realize that they face a greater risk of losing in the general election.
And you, as an Optimus Prime, thought that would be in about a year.
And I really thought that when you had a president openly committing crimes, that would be the apex. And it turns out that it wasn't.
Nope.
Because of the what I hope, again, what I can only hope is just the unique phenomenon, terrifying phenomenon of Donald Trump. I mean, it that would be, the optimist would say, you know, once Trump is gone, efforts to, you know, to be Trump 2.0 are bound to fail. I think there is some precedent for that. But I don't know. I mean, that's Optimus Prime. That's wishful thinking. I want to share. There's so much I want to share with you.
Yeah.
I just got a text from a friend of mine at the Department of Justice. This person will have to stay anonymous, who says, many people are asking seriously how they can be deputized as assistant U.S. attorneys in D.C. so that they can prosecute these criminals.
Yeah.
If you're in DOJ, and I said, can you do that? And this person said, well, you know, if you're in DOJ, you could theoretically become a special AUSA.
Wow.
But look, then this person said, realistically, there are enough people on the ground in D.C. dying to take on these cases that they're not going to need to deputize outsiders. But I thought, you know, as we're talking about institutions, I've said this a lot. Those are people inside the DOJ saying, yeah, wind me up and point me in that direction because I'd love to prosecute,
so,
you know.
Yeah. Let's
terrorist
talk about,
number 2,374 in line here.
Let's talk about the law here. There's so much. What is your read? And I've seen you retweet some of the stuff, so I assume you're aware of it. But there seems to be video suggesting that police opened up the barricades. I mean, to what extent? There's also the stuff floating around about DOD and the fact that like Trump didn't allow or somebody didn't allow the National Guard to come in soon enough. What's your read on all that?
So. A couple of things. The first is I saw the same notice that you did that the Department of Defense failed to authorize or refused authorization for the D.C. National Guard to be brought in to quell the insurrection, which is, you know, the purpose of having a National Guard in the District of Columbia. And a lot of people speculating that, look, you know, we saw Trump dismiss out top folks over at the Department of Defense over the past couple of weeks. I don't want to say that that's implausible because nothing with this president is implausible.
Well, it struck me as thinking a little too far ahead for Trump.
Yeah, but. I think that's right. And I would add that we then saw conflicting reports that the entire DC National Guard has now been called up, right? And that seems to be – that has been corroborated by the AP.
Well, and talk about the unique situation of DC and why this matters. I mean, it's not a state, so it's in a weird situation, right?
It is and let me say it like this because I saw the question came up in the chat. Due to the Home Rule Act of 1968, right, the District of Columbia is not a state. It is a semi-autonomous city under the jurisdiction of the federal government. Its budget is set via line item in the Omnibus Budget Act that just passed. And so it has some local autonomy, but that's why it was called Home Rule, it's not a state. And what that means, however bizarrely, is that state law crimes that are committed within the jurisdiction of the District of Columbia are federal crimes for purposes of pardoning. In other words, the mayor, ordinarily in a municipality, right, either the mayor or the governor of that state would have the ability to pardon state law crimes. The Home Rule Act of 1968 explicitly says that the president of the United States has the exclusive power to pardon criminal offenses committed in the boundaries, the jurisdictional boundaries of the District of Columbia. So, yes, that means Donald Trump could issue a blanket pardon
for everyone.
To, for everyone in that would follow sort of the Jimmy Carter draft dodger party, right? That says anybody who was in the District of Columbia on January 6th, 2021 has a full and complete pardon for any and all criminal offenses committed, you know, within three blocks of the Capitol building.
Wow.
Right. He could do that. That is within his power. And if you ask, what if it's treason? I would point you to Federalist number 74. In which you just
that says anything
Google.
The fuck goes. Is that what it says, Andrew?
It kind of it, what it says is so. Yeah. So it's it, this was Alexander Hamilton responding to questions about how to limit the presidential pardon power. And it says he then argues against saying the president shouldn't have the ability to pardon people for treason. And then proceeds to make the argument that, yes, he should. And so I point that out not because Hamilton was, you know, the end all and be all of, you know, font of wisdom or whatever, but because when you ask as a matter of historical understanding of the pardon power, it is 100% clear, right? It is clear as Kushner that the president has the ability to pardon those who commit treason. Why a president would do that unless they were themselves treasonous, I don't know. But nobody could make an argument.
I didn't even think about the fact that Trump could pardon all that. I mean, what do we do? I do not want to hear a word about not prosecuting this fucking piece of shit. Prosecute him at every possible angle. What do you make of any of the – do you think that the Republicans will agree to do any sort of impeachment, 25th Amendment, anything right now? I mean, things are getting pretty – now, it definitely, you know, affects our perception, the fact that Twitter thing about Mike Pence is a hoax and, you know, apologies for that. Well, it seems to be the consensus here. That was just a bit of fun, but it did kind of make me think differently about Mike Pence. It sounds like he's, you know, not going that far. But do you recommend that Democrats just impeach him again right now? I mean, assuming they can get back in the building?
100%, right?
Yeah.
And there are several reasons to do that, right? Let's leave the practical reasons behind because there may be practical reasons. But assume that it breaks down exactly the same as the Ukrainian impeachment, right? I would want to impeach him for the same reason I wanted to impeach over the Ukrainian misconduct, mm-hmm. right? Over the crimes committed in extorting a friendly foreign power at the mercy of being occupied by a hostile foreign power, conditioned to that ally generating fake news to the benefit of the president and the detriment of his political opponent. We should stamp that in the history books. And by God, we should stamp this in the history books. And yeah. I don't care that, you know, you've only got 2 weeks.
And it doesn't cost anything. What does it cost?
Correct.
I mean, this applied to me, you know, or I think this was my opinion even before all this. I think it doesn't cost anything to impeach him for the Georgia phone call. The only thing would be like, okay, you need to be working on checks or whatever. But like, it takes 5 seconds. You know, it doesn't take a lot of time. It doesn't cost anything to impeach him for this terrible Georgia phone call that we're going to talk about. And now that equally applies. This is outrageous. And I don't care if, you know, with all the elections are over for now, until whatever the next special election will be, like where there's no other downside, just fucking do it. Impeach him and see, again, make Republicans go on the record again about this. That there's huge benefit to that, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And that gets into sort of the practical calculations, which is I bet I bet that, for example, you would probably have more than one Republican defect this time around. Right. I do not feel confident that they would be able to orchestrate the same idiotic procedural maneuver and say, oh, well, yeah, we're not going to hear witnesses. You know, we're just going to move straight to a vote on this issue. Right. I think you have the potential, you know, that if you have just, and let me make the argument to you, if you have just made the cynical argument regarding Mitch McConnell, right? If you've said, which I think is correct, you know, Mitch McConnell is not the Grinch. His heart did not grow three sizes today. he's still the Grinch from page one, sticking the antler on Max, right? Like, he's horrible and terrible and awful. And so if the only thing that explains his actions are political expediency of which way the wind is blowing, that suggests really powerful wind, right?
Yeah.
That suggests that you might be able to get a Mitch McConnell, set, you know, on record as voting for the inquiry into the impeachment of Donald Trump, or perhaps voting to convict Donald Trump. I don't know. But I think if you think that solidarity would outweigh, I think we have a really, really strong bit of evidence from today before the violence happened, that no, it doesn't.
God, I'm overwhelmed by this. I mean, the thought that our elected representatives, now, obviously I do not care about some of our elected members of Congress and I'm not a huge fan, but still, the idea that they're in danger and in fear for their own lives today is truly should make you sad as an American. I mean, that is just so depressing. It's hard to not get emotional about. Like, this is, if you gave a shit about this country ever, and we know that these people did not and never have, this should truly sadden you, what's happening. I just can't believe it. I mean, you said it at the top of the show, I was going to ask you, like, has this ever happened? Have they ever had to evacuate the Capitol? Somebody said that the only time they've had to do that, or the last time they've had to do this, is in the War of 1812. Like,
yeah,
this is not normal. I don't know. Normal.
And I say this also to help contextualize, as we're all getting various media reports right now and are trying to sift through everything. The last time I had access to information, I've told this story on a Q&A before, was on 9/11, right? And there was not a formal evacuation of the Capitol, in that Congress was not presently, like, in a joint session, right? So, but members of Congress were contacted on private back channels and sent to safe houses.
Yeah.
And a very good friend of mine, one of still my best friends today, was his uncle was a member of Congress. And so we were getting, and he was then passing along, you know, I don't know if it violates some national security protocols, it probably does. But we were getting regular updates as the rest of us were walking down Pennsylvania Avenue, which is where my Covington offices were, to Wisconsin Avenue, to then walk up Wisconsin Avenue outside of the District of Columbia, where we then got met by my wife, who was there with a minivan, to take us all into the suburbs. And the reason we walked those 5 miles is because there was a rumor that there was a sarin gas attack in the metro, right, in the D.C. subway. The roads were shut down, obviously, on 9/11.
Yeah, if we're talking about 9/11, yes, okay. But there are pictures, and I'm not going to share them because they're Getty images, and you just told me that they're people are looting the fucking building. There's an asshole, a Trump asshole, carrying away the podium. Now, I'm not talking about, like, oh, there's a threat and it was evacuated. Yeah, okay, that maybe has happened before. There are intruders.
The storming, yeah.
Yeah, they are taking things. This is a joke.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. It is. And there I want to read, I shared this out on Twitter, and this is the conversation I want to throw back to you. It is very obvious to me. If you've ever been to the Capitol, there are choke points to enter the building, right? And those choke points occur, right, where the metal detectors are located, where the ramps are located. It is incredibly easy to prevent thousands of people from getting into the Capitol with, like, five guys, right? And particularly if you had five guys in body armor with – with tear gas and a judicious trigger finger, and you and I both posted separately about the about comparing how these protesters were treated, violent protesters, versus the nonviolent BLM protesters that were just brutalized 6 months ago by the very same Capitol Police. And this is TJ Usian on Twitter, and I just thought this was put so well that I want, this is an African American, and they write, just to be completely clear today, pointed questions like where is the tear gas or why don't we see more choke slams are not demands for police brutality. They are rhetorical questions meant to highlight the fact that the police do know how to avoid police brutality.
Resonates, especially with the video. You know, we were talking about a lot of different things, and there's the video of them potentially being let in. There's also video of them starting to get in, and a cop keeps backing away. Like one of the Capitol Police, I think, is like, stay there, back away. And like, you know, they don't listen to him. And it's amazing to me, all the dialogue, I know it's a separate topic, but all the worrying by people on a certain side about how, well, being cop is a dangerous job and they might think anyone has a gun. And so it's okay that this guy just got off, by the way, for shooting someone in the back 7 times, just happened, what, yesterday? Can't even remember. Apparently you don't have to be that worried. Like, apparently that isn't the only way to do it. And I agree with the sentiment of that tweet. I'm not entirely certain of what level of force should have been used here. I think you can make an argument that maybe this did warrant a certain level of force, but it certainly does make the point that doesn't seem to be inevitable. It does seem that all of a sudden, in certain situations, police know how to not just shoot randomly, like just right away at a hair trigger.
And look, I have no military or police training. Everything I'm about to say is something that I have read, but it makes sense. And again, so I'm open to be corrected. You know, we own up to our mistakes on the show, hence the wood paneling background that's now in the background on the screen. The way in which I have been told that tear gas is supposed to operate is you tear gas the area that the group, the insurrectionists, terrorists, whatever you want to call them, is about to occupy, right? And then that puts up a big cloud, and then they turn and run the other way.
Yeah.
Right? That's the appropriate use of tear gas. And this, right, as you see them, nobody was running. I mean, you know, that the average BMI here was, you know, over 50. So nobody was doing any running in this group. They were, you know, sauntering towards the Capitol. And as you see that happening, you back up and you use a canister of tear gas to prevent them from occupying that small space. That's what I meant by there are a number of choke points, right? And part of what bottlenecks, so we're talking about police brutality, I suppose. Yeah. I should be clear, bottlenecks. And that was part of what made the use of tear gas so horrifying back in July was it was being thrown into the middle of crowds where that does not disperse crowds. That just hurts people, right? That is just an implement of torture. So I am by no means an expert on how to disperse crowds.
I'm not saying how it should or shouldn't be done. Actually, this is an interesting quote here. I'll put it on the screen. Yeah, the ones that shoot don't fear for the lives. The man backing up did. That's interesting. I mean, kind of. Yeah, like I'm not saying he necessarily should have shot. By the way, he was alone for a minute and then he backs up the stairs until he's with other people and they still don't do anything, other officers. But I'm not saying how they should act. I'm just saying it seems as though this shows that there are cops who know how to act a certain way and they aren't inevitably just going to shoot anyone who looks like they could be armed, because we know these people are armed. Should we bring in our good friend AG here, who is kind enough to stop by? Okay, there is so much to talk about. Let's bring AG on. How's this going to look? There we go. That works. Hey, AG, how you doing?
Hey, interesting day today.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was nice talking to you. That's all you have to know.
I've been kind of in the backstage area, the staging area, the green room, the virtual green room, listening to what you all are saying. And I couldn't agree more. I don't think that the answer is to shoot these protesters. I think the answer is to not shoot the other ones.
Yeah.
And yet here we are. And, you know, you're talking about these pictures and these videos that I'm seeing of the police just sort of letting people in. There needs to be a full investigation of the police response to this insurrection today.
Here, here, here. Heather Loveridge notes in the comments that the insurrectionists were respecting the velvet ropes. Right. That's true. We've seen the video of that. And yes, at one point, you know, they step over them like they're cutting in the line at Disneyland. But like, you know, this is not an organized rush of, you know, thousands of folks that you can't handle. This could have been handled and we need answers.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
You know, I wanted to follow up. I was asking Andrew some legal questions, and I'm sure, AG, you might have one or two. But who can be held accountable for what in terms of the politicians, Andrew? Is it nobody? Is there any chance of, like, you know, inciting violence? Is there any chance of Trump being able to be held accountable? And forget about pardon everything. I mean, just, you know, at least initially before being pardoned and let off free.
Specifically, the video of Rudy Giuliani with the crowd, this crowd, before they all marched on the Capitol saying, we need a trial by combat. And I don't know why he is not in handcuffs right now for inciting that. Yeah, he said that. And he was hitting the podium and the crowd was going wild. And how is that not?
It is criminal behavior. I don't have the statutes in front of me, but the classic set of cases, right? The absolute apex of free speech with the late 60s, early 70s Warren Court, and cases like Brandenburg versus Ohio, which narrowly confined the idea of criminalizable conduct of inciting to riot. Versus protected free speech. And the standard is imminent lawless action, right? And this very clearly seems to meet that standard. You're there with these guys, you rile them up, and then 10 minutes later, they are breaking windows, you know, stealing the Declaration of Independence, posing in the chair in the well of the Senate.
The Declaration of Independence joke isn't even that much of a joke. No, it's not. It's like barely an exaggeration.
Although these dummies probably don't realize it's across the street at the National Archive. But, you know, we have somebody in Nancy Pelosi's office with his feet up on the desk, leaving a note of saying we will not back down on a manila folder. I don't understand why there aren't hundreds and hundreds of arrests today. It needs to be investigated. I just don't understand how this was allowed to happen. And I really don't get how the DC police didn't see it coming.
Let me take both of those. AG, I don't know if you were here in time to one of my contacts at the DOJ sort of back channeled me and said the energy is off the charts at DOJ for prosecuting each and every person involved in this. So if you're asking about our institutions from the inside, career prosecutors want to be pointed in this direction and sort of given given all the ammunition to do so. Yeah, let's.
Yeah, and I think Biden's deliberate language of calling it insurrection bordering on sedition opens the door and gives the green light to that, although he's not going to be getting involved. He's going to remain independent from Department of Justice. But I just got a report. And I can't confirm this. I just want to say I can't confirm this, but that it apparently Chris Miller at the Pentagon has confirmed that it was Vice President Pence.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that too.
Asked to activate the National Guard, not Trump. Has anyone heard anything? You've heard about that, Thomas?
I have. Yeah, I saw your tweet, and I think Andrew. I want to say Andrew's seen that as well because I think he retweeted. I'm not sure, but anyway, yeah. What could possibly? How could that even happen? I don't understand it. He's either the vice, you know, either the president or not. Like, is he still the president then, or is Trump?
I will say this: the vice president does not have the authority to authorize calling up the National Guard. Would it surprise you to learn that, you know, Donald Trump has barricaded himself in a toilet somewhere and is just sitting there tweeting and not answering questions and not
who
doing
does
his
have
job?
The authority to activate the National Guard in DC?
The president,
right? Only the president?
As far as I know, only the president.
Which kind of makes you wonder if this is a confirmed story, if Pence wasn't invoking some sort of 25th or some kind of hey, in the absence of any real president, I'm here to tell you, you should do this. Or can the Pentagon activate National Guard on their own?
So I don't know the answer to that, right? In other words, you know, could the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff issue an order? That strikes me as plausible. And because that would be then subject to, it would still be in the chain of command to the commander in chief. But ultimately, right, like the military answers to the president. We've got Thomas put up a statement here. So,
well, I put up a comment from the chat who said that the DOD statement says they consulted with basically everyone but Trump. I hate that we have to do the cable news thing of like, it's not normally the whole reason we do our podcast is to not do the like, is unconfirmed, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, this is a kind of an emergency stream. So yes, we can't confirm everything.
And that's why I want to make sure I put those caveats out there. But yeah, I'm just wondering the legality or the, you know, if it's a national emergency, which this is, can the president somehow be circumvented? And, you know, like you said, Andrew, if Joint Chiefs or if SecDef says it's okay and they've consulted with everybody but Trump, I'd love to see that statement from the Department of Defense.
I believe me, we're going to be looking that up as soon as the live stream is over. Here's the answer. The answer, you cited the 25th Amendment earlier, which specifies it's the presidential succession amendment.
Usually if a president is under anesthesia getting an operation
And so there are two, broadly speaking, two camps about what the 25th Amendment did. In one camp is the idea that the 25th Amendment, again, remember, when you're amending the text of the Constitution, there is no higher authority than that document, right? Like, we don't have a super constitution to ask if constitutional amendments are super constitutional, right? Like, once you change the words, that's the law. That's the highest principle, the highest document of the land, right? So one group believes that the 25th Amendment was designed to clarify and provide procedures that sit on top of sort of the inchoate rights of the vice president to assume the duties of the president when the president is not is incapacitated. And that group would then say, so you don't need to formally invoke the notice procedures of the 25th Amendment in an example of where, and they would give an example of like, you know, there's an army storming through the Oval Office and you see the president get beheaded and, you know, you turn around and you're now the vice president and somebody doesn't have to send a sternly worded letter before you, you know, get to act as commander in chief. Right. The founding fathers and common sense would want you to be able to act in an emergency situation.
Yeah.
Exactly right. I think that's probably the better view. The other view is that the 25th Amendment supersedes and occupies the field with respect to emergency powers. And so if you are not delegated emergency powers, you don't have them. And that controversy sort of came to a head in 1982, I don't know, early 1980s after Ronald Reagan was shot. Mm. There was like 3 days in which Al Haig announced that he was in charge on the basis of no authority whatsoever. These are live and unsettled questions. But, you know, again.
Well, I do think the 25th Amendment is not enough here, even if they went with it. I think impeachment is the answer. We need to make sure he can't run again. And I don't think the 25th Amendment makes that guarantee.
It definitely does not. So amplify that. I was going to say the same thing, but amplify from your perspective on the remedies under impeachment.
What do you mean? Well, you impeach a president. Now, we've impeached him already once, but he wasn't convicted. And it isn't until upon conviction that you can vote again to make sure that person cannot run for office again. And I'm hoping, and again, we talked about this earlier, Andrew, internal optimism. that the Republicans withdraw their objections to the Electoral College, but that there could be a meeting between Pelosi and the leader, former leader McConnell. He's currently still the leader, the majority leader, that, hey, if we impeach him, will you remove him? And can we make it so he can't run again? I have to believe that that conversation has at least taken place.
I think that's right. I want to – somebody mentioned in the chat that Trump's latest tweet was bonkers.
Yeah, I can read it if you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
It just says, these are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long. Go home with love and in peace. Remember this day forever.
What?
I will never get over the fact that they're doing a civil war for this fucking guy. Like, they're going to do a civil war for this celebrity apprentice guy.
Well, they'll try. They'll lose miserably. This has always been my argument for gun reform. It's like, what do you think? You and your AR-15 are going to overthrow the fucking, the government?
No, that's fine. This is explicit broadcast.
Yeah. You aren't going to be able to do that. They have the National Guard. They have, what do you think? Maybe you'll be able to sit in Nancy Pelosi's chair for a minute like a jackass, or maybe you'll be able to walk out with a podium. But why do you think that you'd be able to overthrow, actually complete a coup or an insurrection? This is an attempted one, and it will fail. And it is failing. I think
they've locked down. I'm seeing that they've actually cleared out the Capitol or whatever, and it's the Capitol is secure after pro-Trump mob breached. Yeah, so that's good. Do you think they try to resume?
By the way, just for comparison, that took 12 minutes.
What took 12 minutes?
The curfew went into effect at 6 p.m.
Oh, okay.
It took
They weren't working to clear it before. I mean, they would have been trying to secure it the whole time, I think. But
I'm sure it was the curfew that did it, right? That's
You saw people like walk away as the Capitol Police came up and were like, okay, it's after your bedtime. We're going to start arresting people.
They weren't arrested before. Why are you?
Do you think so? I was going to ask though. Do you think the Senate will try to finish up tonight, or will they put it off?
Yeah, they will.
I think
they will. At least there's a bunch of senators tweeting, "We'll get this done," and it has to be done today anyway. So I'm like I said, and I think Andrew and I talked about this earlier. They've got to withdraw these dumb objections. They have to just stop and just certify the effing vote, and then. I mean, they're in there huddled under desks, putting on gas masks. There you go, Matt Gaetz. You can finally use your gas mask. because there's tear gas being deployed in the rotunda of the Capitol building, and it's still sinking in. I'm a veteran, and I am watching our house be attempted to a coup to take over the Capitol building. These are domestic enemies. These are the ones that I swore an oath to protect the United States against.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that these senators, especially after watching McConnell's little alligator crocodile tears speech on the Senate floor, saying this is dumb. It was Biden clearly won. We have to stop this. This is stupid, and he knows that because he's basically, if he lets this go on, the Republicans are just going to argue with themselves, divide themselves, and then sit and trash the Electoral College, which is the only thing that exists that is helps them stay in power. And so McConnell's like, please don't get mad at the Electoral College because we'll never win again.
He did basically say that.
Hope they don't.
I want to amplify what you just said, AG. That because again, I've spent 4 years sort of swatting away insane conspiracy legal theories, and so I've started to like understand the mindset, the kind of national treasure, like, oh, well, see, if they don't say the right number by the stroke of midnight on January 6th, then that means Trump is president forever. Doesn't mean that. The operative law, you can look it up. It's 3 U.S.C. 15. You type it into Twitter. It's a long run-on paragraph. It's really kind of hard to read if you're not a lawyer. But it directs this count begin on January 6th, and then it describes the procedures for how to deal with objections to a slate of electors. And boy, we haven't even talked about how everything today is inappropriate, right? Like, there aren't multiple slates of electors. And so therefore, I think, and I was really hoping that there would just be a rule from Mike Pence as the chair that says, your objection is valid, but there's no competing slate to compare. So there's no work for the Senate or House to do. He could have done that. He did not. So, you know,
might now.
Well, you know, let's see. But then it says, when the two houses have voted, they shall immediately again meet, and the presiding officer shall then announce the decision of the question submitted. No votes or papers from any other state shall be acted upon until the objections previously made to the votes or papers from any states shall have been finally disposed of. So in other words, that there is no requirement that this all take place on January 6th, if they go late into the night tonight, or even if they adjourn and meet again tomorrow,
well, right? Because by resume, the rules, yeah, if they had 10 senators and 10 and 10 congressmen to object to 10 states, yeah, it would be 40 hours of debate and process, and so that would put you into the next day. And so, and then also, you know, when you have something that happens like, oh, I don't know, an insurrection at the Capitol building, yeah, it can probably do a little quick vote and make a Senate rule that says we'll adjourn and be allowed to finish this another time. But yeah, I think they'll finish it tonight. And like I said, I'm really hoping they stop with these dumb objections, although it wouldn't be the worst thing for me in my life to sit around and eat popcorn while the GOP eats itself and trashes the Electoral College and makes our own arguments for us to abolish it. Like, cool, man. Bro, hey, have at it. You know, knock yourselves out.
So, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, you go ahead.
No, I was going to change topics. So if you want to figure that out or if you want to finish that up, go ahead.
No, I think we're getting the bottom line. There is no kind of, you know, it's only sovereign citizen logic that thinks that this has done anything other than gotten a woman killed, right? Because as far as I can tell, I saw the and again, dead. Yeah, we're doing the cable news thing, but looks like
everybody's reporting that. Yeah, that seems pretty solid.
So, congratulations, you know, the your death toll now exceeds Antifa's. Good work. The official of which I am general counsel for Antifa Inc. as well.
Oh yeah, of course.
Is that a tweet that you just read a minute ago about go home and remember this day?
Yeah.
Twitter has labeled it as a risk of violence.
Yeah. So
you can't reply it or like it, but they're keeping it up.
Yeah.
Heroes, fucking heroes is Twitter. So what I think this was before you came on, AG, but we had talked a little bit about the fact that Trump could just pardon everybody involved in this right now. And I hadn't even considered that level of evil. But I wonder if he even has the wherewithal or cares enough to do that. But I'm wondering, when it comes to the politicians or Trump himself, is there a way – because this last 4 years has required us to always be thinking about how can you get him there's always – state crime, can't pardon that. Is there a timing thing we can do? Like if we don't – if the investigation doesn't take place or whatever until after he's out, I mean, is there any way to be able to get him for anything like this, for starting a fucking insurrection or
– Well, that's another reason I want to impeach him, is so that he can't pardon himself.
Yeah.
You know, and then we won't. I mean, I think that pardon should be challenged anyway. But then you don't even have to ask the Department of Justice to challenge that pardon by prosecuting him with this crime.
And nobody will cite my arguments in court as to why it's valid. So I feel so dirty about that. But I, gotta call him like I see him. But yeah, I wonder today. I mean, part of why we thought the Pence background tweet was plausible is. They had to evacuate the vice president to a safe house today because Trump supporters were ready to tear him limb from limb for not overthrowing the country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I get it. And again, I believe me, even if Pence were to were to stand, well, what I mean is I'm preemptively saying that, you know, Mike Pence has been the enabler in chief for 4 years, right? He deserves, even if he stands up to Trump here in the 11th hour, you know, that
he's not off the hook.
Yeah, he's not off the hook. That's a great way of putting it. But whereas I thought a deal from Trump to Pence, like the Nixon Ford deal, right? Hey, I'll resign, but you pardon me for everything. I would feel like Pence would have honored that 100% a week ago.
Not today.
And yeah, I'm wondering if the odds on that didn't drop precipitously today.
His life was in danger. They were going after him and Pelosi and anybody who was going to go forward, basically anybody who wasn't objecting to the Electoral College results. By the way, objecting with no... for no good reason, not in the spirit of the law that was written that allows them to object. So it's he endangered Pence, and I bet you Mother is pissed. Mother was mad when he, you know, remember we had reported that once Pence and Trump won, that Mother was like, well, I hope you're happy, because she hates Trump. She hates him. I hope you got what you wanted. Like, she's mad. Wow. You know, it's probably why he calls her Mother. But I imagine that she's got Pence's ear right now saying, you need to do something about this. And now there is, because of Mitch McConnell's speech today on the floor, there is now a division in the Republican Party of people who accept this election and people who are Trump supporters, or, you know, old school Republicans and Trumplicans. And that division in the party, and Mitch knows it, is going to make it so that they can't win any elections anytime soon.
Well, I hope you're right, that you out optimist here. So,
every single Republican election is going to have a Trump primary and a regular Republican guy or lady.
It's part of the good news shows that we were all planning on doing, I'm sure, and tomorrow or whatever. But I am so glad that we've won in Georgia. I mean, I think that really, for so many reasons. But I also think that it could be just that little nudge that Republicans need to try to take back their party from Trump for the next 4 years. I mean, I don't know that they would have had much incentive had it gone the other way. I think they would have thought they can still just win elections on this bullshit. But I don't know. That's when I keep thinking at the 30,000 foot level of, like, conceptually what's gone on here is through Fox News and all those shitty sources and stoked by people who knew better and some people didn't. They have unleashed just a wave of the actual Kraken of just people who are not responsive to the world. People are not responsive to the facts of the planet that we live on. And they thought they could control it and they thought they could use it. And I think that's further and further, you know, showing that they can't. They've lost control of it. When they're yelling at Mitt Romney, when they're yelling at Pence, when they're yelling at Bill Barr, my God, Bill Barr has lost them. I mean, somebody who did more in service to Trump than almost anybody.
They aren't smart enough to make that connection.
But that's just the point. I mean, maybe what will it take for the cynical actors at Fox News, who I think bears more responsibility for this than maybe any of these politicians. But I mean, they also back each other up and stuff. So, but like, what will it take for them to say, like, maybe this is a dangerous fucking thing we're doing?
You know, maybe today. If today didn't do it, nothing will.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been saying that collectively for the last 4 years. Well, if this doesn't do it, nothing will. But I can't think of anything that tops a coup attempt.
Yeah.
An insurrection at the Capitol building. I can't think of what.
As long as they were winning elections, they had no incentive. They thought they could just do this forever, as long as they were winning elections. But now that they've lost and this has happened, you got to hope that this does something.
Well, and let's amplify that. It is a coup attempt, and there is at least one person who is dead. It's still the stupidest coup attempt in the history of humanity. Right. Like, you cannot find a dumber effort to say we're going to make Donald Trump president forever than we're going to interfere with an administrative counting process for a couple of hours. That's the brave state, right? That's you know, it's going to be hard to do the William Wallace speech.
It's like
we bravely broke open the windows and posed next to this velvet rope for 3 hours.
I mean,
and
it's
12
not
minutes.
As though any of us here thought they were going to succeed, but somebody did die, and you know, there was a fucking plan to kidnap the governor of Michigan. There was like
and execute.
And I mean that it's one thing to like chuckle at how incompetent they are, but like it doesn't take that many tries to do something horrible.
It would be like if Inigo Montoya stormed the castle, found the six-fingered man, and says, "I just have a message from my dead father," and then left. Like, what are you? Why are you storming the castle to crash a conference call? It makes no sense. It is stupid, but it is dangerous. There are consequences. And I think that we are going to be unraveling this for a long time to come.
I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fellas, I gotta run give Dana a call. We need to record our Daily Beans episode for tomorrow. Andrew, you'll be appearing on that as well from an interview you and I did earlier. And it's an unreal day. It is one of the darkest yet brightest days in our democracy. We have the people have spoken and the elections worked and we did our jobs, but yet we have this failed coup attempt, and it's disheartening. It's heartbreaking to watch, especially as a veteran. But any American has got to be absolutely globally embarrassed by this.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Thanks for your time. Thanks for coming on. And I'm not a veteran. I'm not somebody who typically, you know, is like super patriotic. But if patriotism in the country means fucking anything, it should mean being appalled by our Congress running for their lives as a bunch of fucking maniacs loot the Capitol building. I mean, come on. If the country means anything, it would mean that being appalling to you. I just cannot understand it.
Yeah.
Well,
swearing looks good on you guys.
Well, we've been swearing on these streams for a while. We had to give ourselves some outlet. All right. Thanks so much, AG. We're all looking forward to the new show, of course, on the 20th. Sadly, it is it's my second favorite thing I'm looking forward to on the 20th, but, you know, a close second. So we'll all tune into that. All right. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Oh God! Well, it's already been almost an hour. What are you, closing thoughts, or what do you think we should do here, Andrew?
Yeah. I mean, see if there's top. I'm sort of looking in the chat if there's a major area because you know.
Any questions?
Unscripted. Yeah. but I do want as I'm buying time for that. I want to emphasize we're recording the show tomorrow. And we are recording two incredibly optimistic episodes of the show, right? The first is going to talk about the amazing
victory. Hold on. I'm not ready to commit. There may be another coup in between. Now, who knows, man? What's going to happen tomorrow? Okay, as of now, we're planning on
as
the star.
As
of
now. Yeah. the plan is no. You're right. Look, like we could be thrown off by that. But we had a historic moment yesterday, and not just a historic moment, but a historic moment that the people watching right now helped make happen.
Yep.
And we're gonna go into that. We're gonna tell story. Like I was compiling them. I was in tears of joy last night. And I can't wait to share those stories with you. And then pushing off to Tuesday, more of the Schadenfreude good news. I think, and I'll tell you here first, and you heard it, here first. I'm going to try and get Thomas to title Tuesday's show. Donald Trump is going to prison.
Absolutely.
I think
you said Donald Trump is going to prison in Georgia.
In Georgia.
Okay.
It is super clear to me that what Trump did is and I don't know why more legal analysts haven't kind of jumped on board with identifying the specific elements of the crime, how easy it will be to prove Trump's criminal intent, right? Like that's always the hardest part of these. It's amazingly easy with respect to this call. I think it is just like listening to an hour of Trump doing his deranged, idiotic mafia boss wannabe throwdown. And I like the comment you put up, but it's still not going to derail me. Is just wearying, right? Like, I think that, you know, journalists and lawyers and people just like kind of get sick of listening to the guy and are like, oh, well, this would be super hard to prove. It's not hard to prove, right? Like, he called up a Secretary of State and said, I want you to file false voting numbers because I want to win the state. And by the way, if you don't do that, here are the two separate threats that I'm issuing to you. And it is just clear as Kushner. So, you know, so that's what we've got coming up, that we're going to get this shit back on track, guys. We really are. Although today, I mean, my lunch was in my chest all day today, right? Like, it was, it still is. You don't want to see this, but you also at the same time want to see the aftermath. You want to see that our institutions survive. So,
yeah, I listened to that call and, boy, I had some feelings about it. That you described it well. Yeah. What do we say? Jeez. Any closing thoughts in the chat, everybody? I think people don't want us to leave, but I'm amazed at how many people are watching just, you know, on a short notice thing. I think it just goes to show that what a fucking day this was, everybody. I mean, you kind of said it. I spent last night and this morning in a fantastic, I'm happiest I've been in a long time. I mean, it genuinely, the Georgia news is just so good. It is like, honestly, like I've been over the moon about it. I mean, you guys know me. I've been a bit negative, but you've probably known me in a really bad 4 years of the country. this is truly just magnificent what happened in Georgia, and I'm so happy. And then, you know, we had to have this absolute atrocious bullshit to harsh my, you know, to harsh my my good mood, and it's very sad, and it sucks that. You know, I was going to ask you, what do you think? Do you think this would have been much different regardless of what happened in Georgia? I feel like this was already going to happen because of the bullshit coup attempt on the January 6th proceedings anyway, right? Do you think it would have made a difference?
I think this was going to happen regardless, right? Yeah. I think the Georgia situation was just ready for Trump to spin as a win either way, right? Mm-hmm. Because if they won, it was because I went down and rallied and, you know, they were all the Trump, but they better get in line, right? And if they lost, it's because, you know, the election is rigged and, you know, they're all corrupt and everything else. So, I think this was going to happen regardless of what happened in Georgia, but I do think, I was saying this to you last night as the returns were coming in, when the Republican Party loses two special election runoff races in Georgia, that will cause some a day of reckoning, right? Like it has never before happened in the modern era, right? In since Georgia implemented its runoff races.
I hadn't dared dream. I'm still happy. Truth be told, I'm still happy.
and look, when the final numbers come in, it looks as though Ossoff might be outside the mandatory recount margin, like it. Right? Which is 0.5%. And again, there has never been. I've read a shit ton of recount cases. The most I've ever seen a recount change votes by is like 600 or 700 votes, right?
Yeah. You
do not recount and gain thousands of votes, and there has never been a case, I feel confident saying this, in which a recount at any level, mandatory or discretionary, and again, like, you know, Loeffler's got $1 billion. She can request recounts till the cows come home. There's never been a case in which a recount has overturned 10,000 votes.
Yeah.
Right? And so those races are in and done and safe, and we did it. I have floated. I'd be curious your thoughts on this. I would, if she wants the job, I would certainly offer DNC chair to Stacey Abrams.
No, she's running for governor. And when's the term up? Is it 2022?
Kemp's term? Well, let's see. She got screwed out of it in 2018. So that would be 2022.
I believe, from what I've heard of her, that's what she wants to do.
Yeah, you could, you could do both jobs.
Okay,
yeah,
all
right. She could certainly take the job from 2021, right?
You know, I wonder who wants to do that job, given that it's all downsides. You just get to be the punching bag for every leftist idiot who thinks that the DNC is ruining everything. So
you do, but again, the model for that, and I retweeted out a Howard Dean tweet in which he called Josh Hawley. He was like, you know, don't pretend like, you know, because Josh Hawley posted some bullshit like, oh, well, you know, don't engage in violence, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And Howard Dean was
oh,
like,
no, please stop. Don't. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And Howard Dean said, you did this.
Yeah.
I then retweeted it, said, look, I've always been a big Howard Dean fan. And never been more proud of that. Howard Dean, you may not recall, after losing in the Democratic primaries in 2004, ran and orchestrated as an outsider to become chair of the DNC, and was probably the best DNC chair that we've had in modern history. Instituted a 50-state strategy that was designed to take advantage of the downside of gerrymandering, right? And we've talked about this on the show, but I'll say it again. Gerrymandering is designed to give Congress safe districts without wasting it, right? And that is 7 to 8%. And so what that means is, when you have a wave year in which everybody hates the incumbent, all of those seats become vulnerable. But you have to have infrastructure, right? If you've been used to treating, you know, so-and-so's race as, oh, yeah, look, this is an R+8 district. The only people that ever run against the incumbent are, you know, lunatic perennial candidates, Lyndon LaRouche, and, you know, people with no money and no organization and no drive, then you don't win even in wave years. And so, you know, what Howard Dean said was, let's spend money in Utah, in Montana, in Alabama, in deep red states and deep red districts so that we can take advantage of those opportunities when they came up. And that was accompanied by Democrats winning big in red areas in 2006. So,
It took Democrats way too long, because this is what what's his fuck did in 94. Sorry, I'm bad at names when I need to when I'm on the spot. You know, former speaker, right?
You mean Newt Gingrich?
Yes, Newt Gingrich. Yeah. I mean it took too long for Democrats to realize that was what Newt Gingrich did in 94, which was compete everywhere. And then, as you say, I mean that's what we do need to do. I hope, you know, this is part of talking about going forward after Georgia. I really hope we can maintain the energy. I really hope we can it's going to be our job. We have such a big job, I think, Andrew. I mean, and anyone who's interested in not letting the Democratic Party lose to fascists again, because it will happen very soon. If we don't stop it, it will happen in 2 years. I mean, it'll happen in 2 years or 4 years. We have to be ready for the bad faith bullshit. We have to be ready for blaming everything that should probably be put on the shoulders of, you know, Joe Manchin. Or, by the way, just not having more Democrats in the Senate. You know, that'll be blamed on every Democratic senator and Biden for not doing enough. You know, it's going to be our job to decode what's going on and you know, criticize where necessary, but not lose focus of what's really going on. I mean, if the Senate isn't left enough for you, you could sit, which it isn't for me.
Yeah,
you could sit there and be mad at Joe Manchin. Or you can realize that Joe Manchin is occupying a seat that would be more red if he weren't in it. And also, if we were able to elect more Democrats in other places, then we wouldn't have this problem. And also, not to mention the fact that the Senate in general is just unbelievably favorable toward Republicans because of the states. So, you know, putting blame where it's due and not letting criticism of the party get to an extent that is unhealthy, not helpful, depresses turnout. And then wouldn't you know it, we let fascists back in and a bunch of people don't seem to remember. It'll be our job to keep that memory alive, I think, of what happens.
I could not agree more with all of that. I would add, you left sort of unsaid, but like, yeah, instead of being mad at Joe Manchin, go primary Dianne Feinstein, right? Like that's the kind of place where
I voted for her primary opponent. I guess that was already 2 years ago. I thought it was this year, but the time has flown.
Yeah. But agreed 100%. And let's be slightly more explicit. Mitch McConnell and his super PACs are teeing up the ads already that are going to take rhetoric from Harris and Biden in 2020 and say, remember when you elected Democrats and they promised, and then they're going to say, you know, X, Y, Z, did they deliver on any of that? No, vote them out and vote for monsters instead. Right? Like, it will work unless we are there sort of at every step of the way, you know, to hold all the sides accountable.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's what we try and do on our show. A couple people that in the chat have mentioned a few things that we may or may not get to on the show, but I think are worth talking about here. Really important news to me. It's on the whiteboard, but it's probably going to get dropped down for time. In one of the Georgia election cases, the judge issued a 7.5-page order denying relief. And in the last paragraph said, by the way, when this case is closed, I want briefing from both parties as to whether to refer the case to the Office of Bar Counsel, right? And the Attorney Grievance Commission. That's where you get disbarred, right? I want to tell you, I have never, ever seen a judge say that before.
Yeah.
Right. Usually when lawyers misbehave in a courtroom, the judge, because her power is plenary to hold you in contempt or issue sanctions, will say, Mr. Torres, if you come in here playing the opening arguments theme song again, I'm going to hold you in contempt and sanction you $10,000. And she can do that. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to play the song, though,
because it rocks. Power.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it is. I've never seen. At the end of this, I want the parties to brief whether Mr. Torres should be disbarred. So, you know, one of the long-running questions that you guys have had, right? Can Larry Klayman be disbarred? Can Sidney Powell be disbarred? Can Rudy Giuliani? Like, we may see that, and the tide may be turning. That's kind of point one. Related to that on lawyers, I am not going to give up on banging on Foley and Lardner. Foley and Lardner is a Covington and Burling style mega big law firm, Am Law 100. They put out that sort of mealy-mouthed statement of we're investigating into what Cleta Mitchell was doing. They have not fully answered that. They're still on the hook. Sorry, talking for 90 minutes straight. And you know, the fact that Cleta Mitchell resigned, that does nothing for me in my book, right?
Yeah.
We need to know, did she go to Donald Trump and say, oh yes, you are hiring me, Cleta Mitchell, as an attorney? If she did, she should be disbarred. Not just resigned from this case, disbarred. Wow. That is a disbarrable offense.
Just sorry, to clarify as you disbarrable in her actions for the case or the fact that she like took another job against her. Yeah.
In the fact that she is it's really good. I'm glad you asked it. She is a senior partner at Foley and Lardner.
Mm-hmm.
Foley and Lardner, if their press release is to be believed, had their partnership voted and made a decision in November that they would not represent any party to any election lawsuit. But, and then the mealy-mouthed second half of the statement was like, but, you know, our lawyers could get involved in civic voter protection efforts so long, quote, so long as they were involved in a personal and not a legal capacity, right? When Cleta Mitchell went to Donald Trump, she did not say, hey, I'm here as a friend.
Yeah.
She went there as a lawyer. Unless she is even dumber than she looks, and I suppose it's possible, she got a fucking retainer, right? Because we know Donald Trump doesn't pay his bills.
Yeah.
So he wrote her a check, which means that she gave him a retainer agreement. And that retainer agreement would say, you are hiring Cleta Mitchell and or Foley and Lardner,
right.
and would specify the terms of the engagement. So
to clarify, is this the woman during the phone call that tried to chime in and Trump was like, I don't really want to hear from you?
Yes.
Is that her?
Was introduced as his lawyer at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then he was
hilarious. There's an interaction where he says, can anyone on the call tell me whether or not you're looking into some bullshit? You know, can anyone on the call? And nobody talks. And so Cleta, is that her name?
Yeah, Cleta Mitchell, yes.
Cleta is like, okay, well, I'll answer that, you know, and then Trump is like, I don't want to hear from
you. Yes.
I don't have any sympathy for the devil, but it was pretty funny to be like, anyone. And then, you know, she chimes in and Trump is like, not you, anyone but you.
So, and here's what makes that disparable. She represents, and her actions, she is a partner at a law firm. Her actions bind her other partners, right? It is a limited liability partnership. When she says, yes, Foley and Lardner will represent you in this matter, that is acting beyond the scope of her authority as a lawyer to fraudulently bind her firm to whom she owes the highest fiduciary duty, right? Like she's a partner. She's supposed to act in the best interests of the firm. And usually you don't see it in these kinds of cases. Like usually what you see, again, it always comes back to money where you see partners, get disbarred for this kind of behavior, but it's 100% analogous is I'm a partner at Foley and Lardner, let's say, right. At a big firm. And, all of a sudden, a client comes up to me and says, hey, I really, really want to engage you for your expertise. And it's a contingency fee case. And, you know, you'll get 40% of $1 billion. And I say, how about we sign a separate agreement that just says Torres and doesn't say Foley and Lardner so that I get the $400 million and not Foley and Lardner, of which, you know, they'll gladly take the $400 million, but then, you know, I'll get like a $5 million bonus or whatever. So I try and cheat my partners out of the windfall. But you can see that this is 100% the same behavior, right? It is either fraudulently holding yourself out as a representative of a firm for which you do not have authorization, or cutting out the firm for which you work. In order to
we've learned about the bar in general is that do anything completely batshit crazy legally, make it the worst arguments in the world, waste everybody's time, undermine democracy, fine. Do anything to jeopardize the money that lawyers make in some way, you're out of here, bucko.
Look,
that's the opinion of one Thomas Smith. I do not represent opening arguments or Andrew Torres in this
matter. Look, like – I had a friend at Covington and Burling, sadly since departed, who was the district. He was a truly great guy. His name was David Isbell, and he was the country's preeminent expert in attorney ethics law. And he was one of the only lawyers, and he and I talked at great length about this, who was willing to serve as an expert witness on behalf of attorney grievance commission inquiries, right? There are lots of lawyers out there who are attorney ethics lawyers who are happy to represent other lawyers, right? And to argue, oh, your conduct is not unethical. And, you know, it was kind of like a thin blue line kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And he was like, look, the fact that I was a partner at Covington and Burling is what let me do this practice, right? Like, because you couldn't just dismiss me as a crackpot. Like, everybody knew I was a damn good lawyer. And I think lawyers should be held accountable like everybody else. And I will say this, so that view that there's kind of a thin blue line and that attorneys sort of circle the wagons and prevent you from going after attorneys for incompetence and malfeasance and bad faith arguments. I think there's some validity to that, and I would love to see public pressure around that change, right? And so I love it. So keep, you know, you're going to keep calling me out no matter what.
You? No, I won't call you out. I'm calling the bar people out. Fuck them.
The profession, but I'm 100% with you, right? Like, it's embarrassing to me that Sidney Powell has the same job that I do, right? It is. It's embarrassing to me that Rudy Giuliani.
Embarrassing
gets
to me that
Collins
Dave
are.
Rubin has the same job I do, but yeah, I guess we don't have a podcaster association that we can expel people from yet.
I want to answer one more question from Beth. Where
well,
we've
let
been
me
sort
let
of
me
engaging.
Acknowledge the millions of tweets. For one, I got to get you that green screen just so we stop hearing the same comments about the wall over and over and over. We get it about the
build
wall.
The wall. Everybody. No, different wall.
Build the green screen. The other thing is, they did delete Trump's tweets, and I looked around, and it wasn't just Trump deleting them. I clicked on one of them, and it said that it violated Twitter something or other bullshit. So yeah, Twitter is. A lot of people have commented on that in the chat. So yeah, Twitter has. Congratulations, Twitter. You deleted a couple tweets. I think just the latest two, they still have, you know.
It says, this tweet is no longer available. So, interesting.
Just wanted to chime in with that.
Yeah, and that is, there's a Presidential Records Act question there. So, you know, maybe we'll hit that on the show. So on to Beth's last question, which was about Cleta Mitchell, who says she may have been doing it on behalf of another client, though. Go back, read the transcript, and listen to the audio. She is very clearly introduced as, although not attorney of record, one of Trump's lawyers. So I think that's 100% clear to me from that transcript that they at least held her out as one of Trump's lawyers. And again, if they knew, if there was some sort of behind-the-scenes shenanigans, this is why you want that investigation to be in the public, right? Why you are not satisfied, and I am not satisfied with, oh, she's now resigned from Foley and, you know, already went off on her private Twitter account today and groused about how, you know, it was leftists who made her, well, you know, guilty as charged. You shouldn't have a job, and you're horrible.
I'm such a bleeding heart leftist who cares about not having a coup in our country. God, fucking hippie. Right.
So,
oh God. All right. Whew. Well, we will be back at it tomorrow on the regularly scheduled time to do a good news episode. We just wanted to, you know, jump
there
on
is
and
so much
talk about
remember
the
that
horrible coup. Yeah. Well, and I'm glad we did this. So like you said, you know, I can't remember if this was before we went on, but we get to do more a happy news episode tomorrow because we've covered this horrible bullshit today a little bit. So there you go. I'm excited. There's so much to be genuinely happy about, folks. And me saying that, so you know it's
true. Negatron agrees.
Really, I'm so happy. Go ahead.
I think, Thomas, you and I felt the same way, which was today is a high anxiety day. It's a day unlike any other. And I think we wanted to go back and engage with this community and be able to share it with, you know, 1,200 people here who – we're feeling that same sense of uncertainty and you know, and rightfully so. It hasn't happened in 208 years. So I'm really glad we got to do that and spend some time with you guys tonight.
Absolutely. I think I might try to sneak onto my stream and play some original Zelda so that, you know, I can unwind. So could check that out at fine stream stores everywhere. And we'll see you guys tomorrow on the regularly scheduled show.
Bye-bye.
Adios. I gotta assemble the Triforce, man. It's the only way to cope.
All right. I'm gonna call this a sedition live show.
Yeah.
Live stream. Yeah, yeah. Wow. 12.
You know, I'm real.